Look, Bumble knows you're exhausted by dating. All the, must not take yourself too seriously, and 6-1 since that matters, and what do I even say other than, hey? Well, that's why they're introducing an all-new Bumble, with exciting features to make compatibility easier, starting the chat better, and dating safer. They've changed, so you don't have to. Download the new Bumble now.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello everyone, today I will be chatting with Gabriella Blanco. Gabriella is the founder of Healing Parents and creator of the Healing Parents Approach. She supports humans who are intentionally healing while parenting with the tools, support, and community to experience close, lasting, and connected relationship with their children and themselves. Gabriella is the daughter of immigrants from Mexico, was raised in Southern California, and has been living in Oaxaca, Mexico for the past 18 years. In today's episode, we talk about effective ways to help children understand and relate to the feelings of others, how to handle when our children get hurt emotionally, techniques to help children take responsibility for their feelings and actions, and much more. Let's dive in. Just a little disclaimer before we start this episode. This podcast does not provide medical advice. The information on this podcast is for informational purposes only. No material on this site is intended to be a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. All right. Good morning, everybody. Today we have Gabriella Blanco here on the podcast. Welcome, Gabriella.
Thank you, Lindsay. It's really good to be with you.
So today we are going to discuss the topic of when people hurt other people and kind of how we teach our kids to understand that and respond to that. And I think even as adults, we can struggle with this a lot. Like somebody will say something hurtful to me or to somebody I know, and your kind of gut reaction is kind of like say something back. And we're not always kind of trying to understand where that person, you know, might be coming from. And so I had come across your account because you were talking about, you know, hurt people, basically. And you were telling this story about why people hurt each other. So if you don't mind starting off with that, and then we'll kind of branch off from it.
Sure, I'd love to. I'd like to give a little bit of context to this post as well, because it was a little bit after October 7th had happened. And so there was a lot of political kind of tension, of course. Mm-hmm. And I really appreciate parenting influencers and parenting accounts that encourage parents to talk about social justice issues and really bring their kids in to these conversations about injustices and oppression and how to change our world. And at the same time, I think that's a risky thing to do if children don't have any sort of safe explanation around our humanity and why we show up the way we do in the world. And it can very easily, you know, because of the way kids think, do this black and white good guys and bad guys thing that we don't want them to do. So, mm-hmm. You know, it's not helpful to just take the oppressor and turn the oppressor into the oppressed in our kids' minds. Like, no, these mm-hmm. are the bad guys. We want to be the good guys, right? Right. And so I decided to put out this post basically saying, you know, before you have these conversations, and I'm not saying don't have them, you know, before sharing our values and our convictions and our positions about, especially in a country like ours where there is so much systemic injustice, what if, you know, you give them a story that helps them to understand why we do the things we do and remember mm-hmm. that, you know, we're all this human family without saying it in some sort of preachy way. And so that is why I decided to make this post called, Do Your Kids Know This Story About Why People Hurt Each Other? So I'm just going to talk through kind of the basics of that post. And mm-hmm. so the first idea is that every single human hurts sometimes. And at times that hurt feels like a cut, a scrape, or being really sick. And other times the hurt feels like fear, like sadness, like aloneness, and like anger. Mm-hmm. And every single time that a human is hurting means that that human needs some help. And when a human hurts too many times, because a lot of hard things happen to them, they need a lot of help and love. And when a human doesn't get enough of the help that they need with their hurt, they will want to hurt themselves or hurt others. And when a child doesn't get enough help with their hurts and wants to hurt other children or themselves, it's the grown-up's job to help that child with their hurts and to keep mm-hmm. everyone safe. And when a grown-up doesn't get enough help with their hurts and wants to hurt others or themselves, it is a community's job to help that grown-up with their hurts and to keep everyone safe. And some people didn't get enough of the help that they needed with their hurts. And some people were hurt really bad a lot of times. And now they hurt others. And we all hurt sometimes. We all do things that hurt others sometimes. And we all can get some help when we are hurting. Everyone deserves the help, no matter what they have done. And also, this doesn't make it okay to hurt other people. It is never okay for someone to hurt another, especially not a child. What I might specify there is especially not hurt a child. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of the end of the post. And it's based on a conversation that I started having with my daughter in so many different ways over the years. She's 8 now, but I think I started giving her pieces of this when she was probably about 4.
Okay, I have so many things. So the first thing that I wanted to talk to you about was that one of the first things you said was parenting is political, period. It is our job as parents, like you said, to address the injustices. I mean, as you grow older and if you have no idea of what could be happening or why people feel the way they feel, you kind of just leave your parents' house kind of really in the dark. You really have no idea what's going on. And I feel like that can be, first of all, it can be really scary for the child to kind of leave that way. But also, it's just, I just feel like they're going to be so much more productive in society having had those lessons from you, you know? And I do think it can be obviously pretty difficult to talk about, which is why I wanted to have you on here, because I think the way that you kind of set that post up was so beautifully put. Because if everything that you said was to actually happen, right? So if a child was hurting and the parent was able to help, and if an adult was hurting and the community was able to help, like think about what our world would look like if that happened. Every time. It's like if every time a child was hurting, they were able to get that help they needed. I mean, maybe not even from a parent, maybe from somebody that adopted them, maybe from somebody that is just a mentor to them. Maybe a teacher kind of took them under their wing and saw that they were hurting and were able to give them that love and attention, right? And then if every time an adult was hurting, somebody was able to step in and be like, listen, we know that you're hurting others because you hurt. Like, let's break it down. I just can't imagine what the world would look like if we were actually able to apply that. Like, if everybody was able to apply that.
Yeah.
And the other thing I wanted to say, I was like jotting all these things down when you were talking, but just storytelling in general with kids can be so effective. I was just reading a book and it was talking about how the writer went to different little communities where they had different parenting cultures outside of like what we typically see in the US or in Europe, for example. And she was in this Inuit community up north. And it was just like so fascinating to see like how their approach was with all of these things. And they specifically talked a lot about storytelling because up there, there are so many dangers. So there's, you know, the open Arctic water, like right outside your door. There are polar bears ready to attack you. There's all these things. And all they, you know, all she noticed when she was living with them was that the parents were A, just incredibly laid back and they never, ever raised their voice ever. But also she was like, I don't get it. When my kid goes to run out into the street, I'm yelling, don't run into the street, right? Like that's, I mean, that's my automatic reaction, right? But in this book, it's so interesting because she's like, I don't understand. Like, how, like, your kid is always up against danger. How are you teaching them right from wrong? And what happens if they're in the middle of a dangerous situation? Like, you're not yelling? And they're like, no, we don't yell. They use storytelling to kind of like keep kids away from the fears dependent on the age. So like when they're really little, they'll make up these, you know, a scary story about the ocean that makes them stay away from the ocean. And as they get older, obviously they realize, you know, this was just a made up, you know, story. But they use storytelling to kind of keep kids away from the danger when they're younger. And I just think storytelling is such a beautiful way of teaching kids, you know? So I really, really like that. I think to kind of break it down, what are some of the ways that you think we can help our kids understand and relate to how other people feel? So if, for example, if a child comes home from school and perhaps maybe they were, I don't know, getting made fun of or said, someone said something that wasn't very nice to them, like, oh, I don't like your shoes or whatever it is, you know? What are the effective ways that we can talk to our children to help them understand and deal with children that are mean to them?
Yeah. So I think the first thing I want to say is what not to do, just a quick one, and then go through some of the ways that we can. And it's to not ask our children to consider how the other child was feeling. You know, sometimes we think that if our child hurts someone, that we want to say, well, how do you think that made them feel? And if someone hurts our child, that we say, oh, they must have, you know, been feeling pretty bad. And so I think the first thing that I encourage parents to do when faced with this situation is to not go there right away and instead focus on our children's feelings. So I'm actually going to take this out of the context of just the specific event happening and really the work of creating a general culture in the home of listening deeply to the child's feelings. So the first way really to help children understand and relate to the feelings of others is by simply listening very deeply to their feelings. And this is a skill that we never stop cultivating as parents, of how it is that we deeply listen to their feelings in an embodied way when they are hurting and also when they are just existing in the world. And we care, right? And so, you know, this has to do with a lot of respectful parenting practices that surely your listeners have heard about, you know, like when they have a tantrum, how do we actually listen and hold space when they're having these big emotions? My rule of thumb is like, there's really no need to talk usually besides maybe a few gently delivered phrases like, I'm right here, or, I know, and just the eye contact, right? So that is, I know that's not specifically addressing the moment, but when there is a sort of backdrop of this in the child's experience with you, that is going to set up an environment where they identify you as someone who listens deeply, right? And so what we want to do when they bring something like this to us is say, wow, that must have been hard. You know, that must not have felt good for you. And children are self-centered and they need us, you know, in an age-appropriate way, and they need us to listen to them first. And this is also going to be true, as you know, with adults, like if you go to your partner and you want to vent about your boss and they're like, well, your boss must have been really hurting in some way and that's why they treated you like that. It's like, yeah, I know. And then can we please just, you know, talk smack on him for a little bit together? Or can you let me do that? Can I have my tantrum? And that will actually help me get to my place of feeling seen and like I'm not alone in my pettiness and my ickiness and the things I'm not proud of. And you're still loving me and seeing my humanity. And then I can find that space of, yeah, my boss is another human. Okay, now how do I want to move forward with this? And so it's very similar with children. Ooh, that must have been hard. Now, the other thing that I will ask my daughter, you know, after she's told me about the event that either happened to her or that she witnessed. You know, in this case, my daughter told me that she saw one little boy pull down another little boy's pants at school. Mm-hmm. And so the first reaction was, oh, wow, you know, what was it like to see that? That must have been hard. And she got sad, and I could see that there was a little shame, you know, the feelings that are going to come up when you witness something like that. Mm-hmm. And so then my next question, after kind of sitting with her feelings and her thoughts about it, was, well, what did the teacher do to help? So how did the teacher help? Mm-hmm. And so I'm guiding her through the story in a way, right? Okay, a kid got hurt, and then, you know, it was the adult's job to help. You know, my daughter was 7 when this happened, and her answer was interesting because she said, well, she helped the little boy, you know, who had been pantsed. She asked him if he was okay. And then she had but she didn't really help the other boy. Mm. And I said, what do you mean? And she said, well, she just told him he couldn't play for recess. Mm. And I said, oh, yeah, that doesn't sound very helpful. And she said, no, because she didn't help him with the feelings that made him do that.
So amazing that she was able to voice that to you. Like, I'm so impressed.
Yes, I was too. And at the same time, I know that that's just been the work of, so let me go back to actually, let's say my daughter is 5 and the same thing happens. And I asked her, what did the teacher do? Well, she had him sit out. And I might then say, oh, I don't know if that really helped him. Right. So if my daughter's not saying that, yeah, I'd be like, oh, I wonder if anyone ever helped him with the feelings that made him hurt, you know? So that's the kind of stuff I've been doing along the way to bring back this story and not specifically just telling her the story. Right. And so then that's when it comes into her mind, but it's not her responsibility to consider who was feeling what way, but rather, of course, this boy was feeling this way. Mm. Mm-hmm. Of course, something wasn't feeling good. And of course, he needed help, just like we all do when we feel that way and think or do unkind things. So that's one way that we can approach real life situations that come up without having to give them this like explanation of it. Mm-hmm. And then there are, I know you asked for some resources too, and there are some books that can be really helpful in this way as well that you read outside of the context. And when we do that, we don't have to do any sort of linking like, oh, this reminds me of that time you told me. It's just in a very different space with different energy. Then they're also, you know, through these books. I actually don't like the way most children's shows address these things. That's why I don't have one that I would recommend. But there are some books that can be really helpful. And they feel spoken to, right? Because they speak these universal truths, which I want to link back also to something you said about how useful storytelling is. It's like all of the great teachers, the Buddha, Jesus, you know, these religions that are meant to help us understand our humanity relied so much on stories.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
And
that's essentially what it is, yeah.
And so then so much of the ways that we can help children to make sense of this when they're not actually experiencing things is, yes, well-told stories that are somehow connected to those very old truths, right? There's these kind of universal traditional truths that you'll find across so many traditions. Yeah, so that's another one. And then finally, there's chats that we can have after the fact, especially if there might be a lot of shame around what happened, if it was our child that hurt another. Mm-hmm. In the moment, the way we're going to help them the most is by bringing the limit and saying, I'm sorry I didn't get here on time to help everybody, and, you know, keeping everybody safe and removing the hula hoop that hit the friend from the hands of the friend that hit with the hula hoop. But then after the fact saying, wow, you know, yesterday when your friend was over, I just remember I was in the kitchen and I heard your voices start to get very angry. And I thought, wow, something's happening. And when I came in the room, you were holding the hula hoop over your head and hitting her on the forehead with it. And I was so surprised. And I wish I had gotten there earlier to help. And sometimes when we start doing that, they start filling in the blanks of the story. Mm. Yeah, because, you know, she was kept calling me you know, such and such name. And I said, don't. And I kept saying, stop. And she, and then she stood in front of me and kept calling me that name. Oh, wow, man, I wish I had been there earlier to help. And so throughout the story where it's reminding, yeah, I wish I'd been there to help. Of course, that made you angry. Of course, it hurt her when you hit her. Of course, I'm going to take the hula hoop away when I find I'm not going to let you hurt each other. Of course, you both had feelings after. And so we're doing two things here at the same time. We're validating all the feelings of what was going on. We're acknowledging whose job it is to help. We're stating the limit of behavior that's okay and isn't okay without saying, well, you know, we don't hit. Well, you know, it's not kind to hurt people. And then we're helping them to integrate here. So this is actually the brain science of it. So something that was very much in the right brain and probably very amygdala activated kind of gets pulled out into a sequential narrative into the left brain. And so we're helping them to make sense of it. And so they don't associate these talks with like, I got a talking to, but rather, oh, okay, I have a bigger picture of what happened, but there was no lecturing along the way. Wow, it must have really been scary for her when you hit her. Or, oh, it's just, hey, let's pull this out and validate how you experienced it. Let me fill in the blanks of what was going on for me and, you know, what my responsibility was. And yeah, of course she didn't like that. Nobody likes that. And then we keep talking through it. And so that kind of also shame that might be around the event also can dissipate a little bit because it's not stuck in that secrecy. Like, we're not going to talk about it again until I shame you for it. Right? We bring a new experience to it.
And are you giving examples of maybe how to approach something like that the next time?
That's a great question.
Yeah. Like, I think it's like, I love that. Obviously, they, you know, and the adult example is perfect. Like, you want to be seen first. Like, no one wants to be telling their story to their spouse or to a friend, and then their friend be like, well, have you thought about the fact that maybe that other person, you're like, no, wait a minute. Can you just acknowledge what happened to me first? That makes obviously so much sense, right? And then once you've cleared that and you've talked about it, it could be hours or maybe, again, a day later where you're like, okay, let's just revisit that for a second, you know? And you're in a better headspace to accept that information, you know? So as a kid, I mean, it makes so much sense. So when you're revisiting this event that happened and you're kind of talking through it and they're giving you all these tidbits, and how are you kind of addressing or kind of guiding them into a different way to deal with it the next time?
Yeah. So this is where attunement comes in, where it's so important for us to be paying attention to how our child is feeling when we're having this talk with them, because the event could be so loaded with shame, or our child can be particularly prone to shame. And talking both about if they did something, or again, if they, you know, witnessed a child being pantsed at school or being hurt or something like that. And we want to see how icky did this feel for them. Mm-hmm. Because sometimes the first time that we talk about it is the like, oh, cool, I'm so glad you helped me make, you can tell that they're good. It made them feel better. It makes more sense to them. And you're like, wow, yeah, you know, and thank you for talking about that with me. And if it seems like they really are still, they're thinking brains online, they feel connected, they feel safe, they don't feel judged, that is a great place to say something like, well, you know, I'm never going to let you hit somebody. I'll always help you with that. Mm-hmm. And I'm not going to let the friends hurt each other. I'm not going to let the family hurt each other. But I'm wondering, is there something that you want to think that you can do next time you feel like you really want to hit? Mm-hmm. Like, is that something you want to talk about right now? Mm-hmm. Now, I have had the experience of being told, no, if they do that again, I want to hit them.
I mean, kudos to being honest, right? And though, like, again, it's like kind of where you have to think to yourself, like, as an adult, have you felt that way? Like, you definitely have.
Yes.
Right?
Yes. Right.
Yes, yeah. I'll actually hit them again. Yes, I will.
Oh my gosh.
But as a parent, it's like, okay, so what's your next step when they say that?
Right. But you know, just as like, is at, if as a girlfriend, you said to me, no, I'm going to tell that person off again, I'd be like, well, I'll be here for you if you do. Right? Like,
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
all right, yeah, I'll be here if you do. Or, well, hey, I don't think that will like work out great for you, but if you want to call me instead, you can do that. The more safety and connection over this that there is, the more even humor we can bring to it. So in that example, when I was told, no, if they do that again, I want to hit them again, say, okay, well, I'll be there to help you again. That's basically saying this is information for me and that that probably won't actually happen just because they were able to say, I really want to next time. That's important to think about too, that sometimes the saying it to us is what's going to remove the charge.
Interesting.
The fighting back with us.
It's so crazy because, you know, you and I are talking about this and you're like, duh, like, of course, that's what I should be doing. That's what I should be saying. However, like, and I'll put this into the context of sibling fighting because that happens a lot in my house with four kids.
Yeah.
And we can talk about it a little bit more too, because I think it's probably something a lot of listeners have issues with. But we have two kids in particular, the closest in age ones, that fight all the time. And by fight, I mean like physical altercation frequently. And so when something like that is happening, and I've actually done that all the way up until, you know, you say, and next time, and they're like, yeah, I'll hit him again. And I'm like, well, you can't do that. You know, like that's your automatic reaction. Especially, I think it's very, very difficult in the context of it being your own children, because watching one of your children hurt another one of your children is literally heartbreaking. And you want to, I mean, your instinct is to protect both kids, obviously, but like, especially the one that's, you know, being hurt. And so I think as the parent, for me, it's very difficult for me to take that backseat and be like, well, I'll be here for you. Like, taking that extra step can be really hard for me because my instinct is always like, well, you can't hurt people. Bottom line, you know? But as we're talking about it, I mean, it makes so much sense to handle it that way. But I think from the context of it, when it's siblings fighting, it's very, very hard.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And that actually, you know, this ideal chat that we're talking about here, you know, one thing to point out is that it's happening after the fact. And sometimes we're going to give it a day or two because of how our kids might be feeling around it. And sometimes we're going to give it a day or a week or, okay, there's a lot, there's something that's been going on frequently on a daily basis. And then I'm going to sit down and have a chat with each kid. With a kind of, which is important to have it be a one-on-one where they have that direct line of connection to you. And I just want to give one more kind of piece of how that chat can wrap up, which is that when they're feeling cooled off and sometimes they're not, they don't say, no, I want to hit again next time, is that they might say something or you can propose something like, how about the next time you really want to hit them, you come and tell me that that's what you want to do. Right? But they have to know that when they do that, they're going to get met with some serious understanding and connection. Like, oh my God, I get it. Now, these are all ideal scenarios where we're regulated, we're resourced. And I think it's always important for us to know what that ideal scenario looks like so that we can really milk it when we're feeling good. Because they leave really deep imprints.
Yeah.
They matter a lot. And then there's reality, right? There's the rest of the times where you walked in and the hula hoop was hitting the head and you're like, what the hell are you doing? Like it just, you know, you're not able to go calmly put, you know, your hands on the hula hoop and hold it still. And if your child wants to fight it out of, you know, fight it away from you, you're able to hold it. Now, sometimes we are though, and I really want to point out how much it matters that we are, even if it feels like we're only able to do it like one time out of 100. But the times that we're not, there's kind of two ongoing practices that matter a lot. Now, one of them is repair, which is we're going back and we're having that conversation with our kid and we're saying, it's my job to keep everybody safe. And I really don't like the way I did my job yesterday. I don't like the way I talked to you about it. It wasn't okay for you to hit. And it wasn't okay for me to tell you in that way. And I really don't like that. Right. So we are repairing a lot. You know, people will talk about how we're going for about, you know, 20 to 30% of the times if we're getting attunement right, then like the rest of it is normal and okay that we're misattuning. I try to go for 100% of the time repair. So 100% of the times that there was a rupture, we're trying to go back and mention it and say it, whether it's in the moment and we're sending signals of safety, like, hey, I know I'm not being very kind right now. I'm having a hard time with my own feelings. I just want you to know that I know that. Sometimes that's the best we can do in the moment. But that already sends a signal of safety that they're not alone with what they're experiencing or these talks that we have after. So one of them is repair. And then the other is a practice that it can take parents a while to get on board with. But in my experience with the community of parents that I support, it is really the game changer, is a regular practice of being listened to about your feelings about parenting. And I mean, listened to well. So you sit and you can say, you know, my kid's such a piece of, or, you know, like he's such a bully, or she's so bossy, or she's so relentless, or she just needs to get over it. I'm so tired. That's where we say all of the things. And eventually what happens when parents bring this practice into their lives is that they do the internal shift towards themselves from, I'm losing my patience all the time. I mean, you have no idea how many ways I've heard parents blame themselves. Well, I'm the one that wanted to have another kid. Oh yeah. So then it's your fault that you feel frustrated, or, you know, it's amazing, right? So, and I'm losing it and I'm the parent. And so I'm bad. It's my fault. To every time I feel bad, it just means I need a little bit of help. Every time I treat my kids poorly, every time I realize I'm losing it all day long, means I need a little bit of help. And then having a person or a practice in your life, you know, in my community, we call these listening partnerships. It's a hand-in-hand parenting tool, but someone that knows exactly what they're going to hear when when you come to them. And that it's like, this isn't the best friend that you call and you're like, can I vent? And maybe they're going to get it wrong and say, oh, your kid must be hurting so much. Or no, like they're ready they're ready to hear whatever it is. You know, like my listening partner literally will say to me, you might have to bleep this out. I don't know. But she's like, I want to hear all the fucks, right? Because I'm just like, F her and F that and F this and F the dad and F this. Absolutely. You know, and it's... Yep. And we need that. And it's not as pretty as you go and you do it and you come back and you're all refreshed and you tie a little bow on it. We have seasons where we just feel like that's all we're doing, but that's actually helping us to move all the stuff that's underneath the way we're showing up.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, I can't tell you the amount of times I'm like texting my friend. I'm like, what the why did this happen? Why did she do this? Like, what is happening? This podcast episode is brought to you by Earth Breeze. Did you know that the amount of plastic that is actually recycled is only around 5%? The vast majority of the plastic that people place into their blue recycling bins ends up in landfills and not reused. This is because many of them do not meet the threshold of being recyclable according to certain standards. This is even more of a reason to switch over to Earth Breeze laundry sheets and ditch your large plastic containers of laundry detergent. The laundry sheets will arrive at your doorstep in a small box that looks like a box of dryer sheets. The packaging is lightweight and biodegradable. To give you an idea of how much space you would save in your laundry room, you can fit 720 loads of sheets where you used to fit just one 60-load detergent jug. Each sheet is a liquidless laundry detergent that dissolves 100% in any wash cycle. Just toss that sheet in with your laundry and you're good to go. No mess with the liquid detergent. My favorite part is that it makes it much easier for our kids to do their own laundry now. They can throw their laundry in with a sheet and voila, it's done. I just restocked our laundry sheets and purchased both the scented and unscented. The unscented sheets are great for our daughter's sensitive skin. These sheets are hypoallergenic and dermatologist tested, so you don't need to worry about it affecting anyone's skin when you switch over. Earth Breeze is compatible with high efficiency washers, gray water systems, and septic safe for those of you that have a septic system like us. You can set up a flexible subscription that is easily adjustable and can be paused or canceled at any time. I love that we no longer have to buy those large plastic jugs that take up space in our laundry room, and this makes it much easier for our kids to help us do the laundry. This is just another way to help our environment, which is so incredibly important right now. Try Earth Breeze risk-free. They will give you a full refund if you are not satisfied with the product. No questions asked. Switch from the old-fashioned goo to something new. Right now, my listeners can subscribe to Earth Breeze and save 40%. go to earthbreeze.com/Lindsay, that's L-Y-N-Z-Y, to get started. That's earthbreeze.com/Lindsay, L-Y-N-Z-Y, for 40% off.
Your brain needs support, and new Ollie Brainy Chews are a delightful way to take care of your cognitive health. Made with scientifically backed ingredients like Thai ginger, L-theanine, and caffeine, Brainy Chews support healthy brain function and help you find your focus, stay chill, or get energized. Be kind to your mind and get these nootropic chews at Ollie.com. That's O-L-L-Y.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
I'd love to kind of go back around and hear your thoughts on something else too. Actually, two more things. So the first is bringing it back around to the fighting within the actual like home space. So mostly siblings. When you start to hear things kind of escalate, what I've kind of done is made myself more. So if they're in another room, I'll kind of wander into the room and kind of just like pretend like I'm tidying up, like not kind of inserting myself into their conversation. I'm like, okay, things are escalating. Like maybe I'll just make myself more present that I'm here in case someone needs help. Because what we've done is we've told the kids, if you're having, you know, an issue with one of your siblings and it's making you feel really bad, come find one of us. We can help you. Like that's what we've been telling them for a long time. And so sometimes that works. And sometimes it doesn't work. It kind of just escalates too quickly or whatever. So I kind of, you know, we make ourselves present. So once things start to escalate and they're not kind of calming down once you enter the room, are you like, how are you approaching this? Are you saying, okay, are you trying to get them to disengage by like bringing one child somewhere else to do a different activity and kind of trying to figure it out? Or are you addressing the actual situation? Like, how are you approaching it?
Well, there's so many variations of what might be going on, but let's assume if it's okay with you that we know who's bothering who, because sometimes it's so hard to know. Because the rule of thumb really with this is to help whoever's being hurt first. Mm-hmm. Yes. So what you said is really genius and really so aligned with what we know about how children's emotions work, which is if they are hurting each other, it is because they're feeling dysregulated. And if mm-hmm. they're feeling dysregulated, it's the bottom line is always going to be that they're feeling disconnection. They're feeling disconnection mm-hmm. to you, to themselves. This is just what it means to be a child. Like you go mm-hmm. through your day, life is so good. I'm so loved. Oh my gosh, what if I'm not loved?
Yeah.
And what am I going to do about that? And oh my gosh, mm-hmm. you're sitting right next to me. I'm going to just hit you or I'm just going to say yeah. something mean to you, right? That's the way it goes. And so sometimes bringing our bodies close to them, giving a little bit of warm eye contact as we come in to do it. And sometimes it's knowing eye contact. Sometimes it's, I was reading out there. Now I'm reading here. I'm going to settle myself right next to you guys because we all know that your voices are starting to do something. And I'm just mm-hmm. going to give you a knowing look like, hey, I'm here, right? Yeah. And what that does is sometimes bring enough of a sense of connection and safety that will, if they have enough of that kind of critical mass of, we'll just call it regulation or self-energy, right? Where then they can tap into that critical mass and kind of whatever was starting to feel icky can be settled through the connection with you. And sometimes it doesn't matter what you do because something really icky happened at school yesterday. Something really upsetting happened that morning because of the way that, you know, your eye contact was kind of mean when they did something. Or, you know, they're always carrying stuff around. And so they need to get that out and they need to get it out with someone. And so what we want to do is wherever we're catching the event, we want that to be able to come towards us and not towards the sibling. Mm-hmm. And so when we come in and we can tell in that moment that one is hurting the other, even if it's because the other was saying something unkind to them first, right? We're not looking for who's at fault, just who mm-hmm. needs help first. We're going to help the one who's being hurt. So we're going to say, are you okay? We're going to make sure they're safe. And sometimes that's going to be by holding back the one that's hurting. But we give that eye contact to who's being hurt. Why? Because for them, it's that need to be seen and to know that we're there for them and we see what's happening and we're going to help them. We usually don't have to do that much more for them once they have felt that. Mm-hmm. If we get pulled in to listening to who was right, who was wrong, and trying to get involved in that one. As you probably know, there's no, that's not in the moment going to bring the connection that they need. So the eye contact is what we want to be focusing on too. And like the, you know, the cues of safety, the prosody of our voices. Again, ideal circumstances where we're resourced enough to deliver these things.
Yes.
And then the child who is hurting also gets that warm eye contact. And if we, whatever we manage to see, we can say, okay, you really want to color with him, or you really want to play with his Lego too, and you don't want her to play with you right now. Like whatever, like we're just naming what we see, not you're really angry or, you know, whatever. And so however that works out, usually once the child that's been hurt has been helped, we want to help the other child by offering them connection. So I don't know if you're familiar, for example, with the special time tool, which is a parenting tool where you set a timer and you basically say, we're just going to do whatever it is that you want to do.
Yes.
For the next 5 minutes. Okay. So if this is one you already use in your home, this would be a good time to use it. If not, but basically you're saying, can I just have like a few minutes with you? Cause I just want to be with you for a little while. Mm-hmm. So that sounds so counterintuitive, right? Like we're rewarding the behavior.
It sure does. Right. Right.
Yeah. But really what we're doing is getting to the shame before it grows and becomes something that's going to make them be protective or defensive or feel like they're bad. And say, no, I see your goodness too.
It's like I started learning all of these different tidbits like over the past 5 years. I'm like, gosh, I wish I learned all this stuff. Like, because again, it goes against what you think. And every kid is so, so, so different.
Right.
And we have one child, well, so far, I mean, our fourth one, she's three, so we're not sure, you know, with school, but our one of our middle child, she struggles a lot with school. She has dyslexia, she has some other things. And so confidence with her and just feeling seen and heard and all of those things are very difficult for her at school. These things just come hand in hand with, you know, having something that's different than everybody else, right?
Yeah.
And so I think so much of what she struggles with is based off of that and how she feels at school. And so we have found like she needs so much more than the other kids sometimes. And so we've even just openly told our kids that, you know, like my oldest, she's 10. And I said, you know, we are going to give all of you guys what you need. And sometimes she needs a lot more than you guys, you know, and I know that you probably wish that, you know, I wish I was able to spend more time with you too, but we are giving all of you what you need in that moment. And sometimes she needs a little bit more, you know, because we do have to give her like that extra time because she's just feeling so defeated at school that she comes home. And again, she takes it out on other people, which is all just so normal. You know, it's like when you think about yourself and if you're struggling with something all day long and you come home, you like want to take it out on someone, something, you know, because of the way that you're feeling. And it's all totally normal. And so we're like working so much with her on that. But we, for years, you know, it was like we didn't really know what was going on. Thank God I had to like really fight tooth and nail to get her the help she needed and the diagnosis and all those things. And then everything kind of fell into place. But I'm just kind of sharing this because if you feel like if you're listening, you have, you know, one of your kids is kind of acting a little bit out of the ordinary when it comes to when they come home, they're kind of like, you know, they just seem angry or, you know, sometimes it's kind of looking more into what's happening at school. Like, are they having a struggle at school that you maybe you're not aware of and kind of trying to figure it out? Because that was like years of trying to figure out what was going on. But it kind of goes hand in hand with if you're struggling with something, sometimes it comes out on the other end. And in her case, it was just at home. It was kind of like this tornado of a disaster every day. And it has gotten so much better. And one of the other things that I'll share really quick that has helped so much in our morning routine. And, you know, I've talked with many people on the podcast kind of about this, but actually applying it can sometimes be so hard. Like everything that we're talking about, right? Like if you apply it once out of 100, you're winning.
Yeah.
That's seriously. So I have talked about this with many different people and heard about it through different avenues, like here and there, but I haven't actually applied it until this particular year. And I've been doing it more and more and more because when you start practicing something, you start to get really good at it, right? And it's just one of those things. I mean, I'm working on so many things with parenting, but this is one thing that I'm like, okay, I think I'm actually getting this. So in the mornings, our mornings are chaotic. Like, some of us are getting ready for work. Some of us just got back from a workout. The kids are getting ready for school. Like, we're trying to get four kids off to school. So we have always, so my daughter, I love her so much. She, when she starts to sense that everybody's okay, like, we're wrapping up, we got to get out of here, she actually moves slower. She does. And it's like a switch. I swear to you, it's a switch. And it used to get me. I mean, if there is anything in the world, I mean, my internal thermometer was boiling hot. I'm like, I need to go outside. I'm going to lose my mind. You could just see her kind of like moving slower to get the backpack, moving slower to get the lunch. And then she just waits until I kind of like reach that, the top of the pot just boils over and just explodes. So what I've discovered is that making it fun in the morning with like a race. So the last actually couple of days, I've actually done this every single morning. I when I tell you this is life-changing, it has been life-changing. So I always look at her and I'm like, all right, here's what we're going to do. I was like, it's you and your brother against mom. I was like, you guys have to get everything ready all before I get to clean up the kitchen. Do you guys think you can do that? And they're like, yeah, like clearly we're going to beat you. And then I was like, if you do that, I'm going to make up some ridiculous song on the way to school, you know, something stupid. Every single morning, first of all, they're working as a team, which is like huge. And it, because they're the ones that are usually getting into it, you know? So they're working as a team together to beat me. And they're in the car before me. I mean, it is like literally genius. I don't know how I was even parenting before I started doing this. Like, I like what an idiot. I truly, it's like so frustrating to me that I like lived my life in this place of like significant anger before school every day, because my kids would just shut down when I was like, hey, it's time, ready, we gotta go, we gotta go. And they're like, no. And all I had to do was make it into this game, you know, and it has been absolutely amazing.
Yeah. And it is unfair that so many parents do not have these ideas or these tools to help them, you know?
Yeah.
Because it's just, it's considered an extra, or, you know, and it's like, no, these things will actually help you to enjoy this job that you have to do no matter what anyway.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, you know, and society is telling you that like you're supposed to like it, or there must be something wrong with you or your kid if it's not flowing.
Yeah.
And no, sometimes there's stuff that we have to say, oh yeah, I'm not a particularly playful person, but this is going to help my child to feel more connected. And this is going to help us put the relationship before the task. And then it's actually going to work sometimes, which, you know, it's help, which we live in a society that says in a sarcastic, and it says it like sarcastically to someone, man, you need help.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's like, wait a second, we need help. Like we all need help. It's not, oh, the pandemic was so awful that mothers then are like dying. And then we're like, oh, we need help. No. Every single day as humans, we're designed to need help from each other, which is kind of coming back to this story, right? We all hurt all the time and we need help all day long. That's life, right?
And especially here in America, like, I mean, the help is not there. It's not there at all. And actually, the book I had mentioned earlier, Hunt, Gather, Parent. So they, have you read that book yet or no?
No, I haven't.
So it's really cool. I mean, she takes a couple months and she goes into these different, you know, cultures or tribes, and she just gets an idea of how they parent. And it's all cultures or tribes that are outside of Europe or the United States, because so many parenting books are based off of like American or European ideals, which is not really ideal. So anyway, it's so fascinating to read because they talk all about these different things. And I'm like, this is so enlightening. And I feel like there was one story, where was she? She was somewhere in Africa. I can't remember the name of the tribe's name. So she stayed with them. They're hunter-gatherers, and stayed with them for a couple of months. And she talks about how they get up in the morning And they all meet, like all the moms, all the kids, all the dads, they all meet in, you know, the center. And the dads will take a couple kids, they'll go off hunting. The moms all work together to take care of all the children. They don't just take care of their children. They take care of all the dads, all the moms, all the human beings are taking care of each other. Like there's no, like, sure, you do have your kids when you go home and go to bed at night, but it is a community raising of the children. And I cannot emphasize enough how incredibly important that is for so many different reasons. And here in America, it's like you have your baby, they kick you out after a day and they're like, that's yours now. We have no resources for you. And most people don't live with extended family. That's not how the US is anymore. It hasn't been that way for a very long time. And so you're on your own and you can't afford childcare sometimes. So you're without that and it's just you, you know? And the repercussions of how incredibly damaging that can be from like the emotional social aspect is just insane. So you're not alone in feeling like this is shitty sometimes.
A lot of the time.
Yeah. And, you know, that is the goal with this podcast, right? Is to just give you these like little tools that hopefully help you in your day where you feel like you're struggling because you don't get that extra hands on deck type of, you know, type of help. Because yeah, it's so hard.
Yes. And you know, from the lens of emotional regulation, it's not just the extra hands on deck. It's the bodies that are co-regulating each other.
Yes.
You know, like if you're all meeting with the purpose of kind of coming together and moving through the day, you're picking up on who's doing okay and who's not okay that day. And how are we helping each other out? And I don't want to idealize because nothing is ever perfect, but it's, yeah, what if there was someone who said, let me hold you for a little bit, you know, let me listen to you, and someone else has the kids, or it's just too much to expect of a partner.
Yes, exactly.
And it doesn't work well when we expect it. And I'm not just talking about, you know, heterosexual, you know, as women, what do we expect from husbands? But, you know, sometimes, a lot of times in heterosexual relationships, men fully depend on women for that because there's no one else in their life they're getting it from. And then it's just, it is unsustainable. It is unsustainable to try to, I think Esther Perel is the one who I heard say this, you know, we're trying to get the needs that a village used to meet in one person.
Yes. Yeah.
And then we think we have to model a healthy relationship for our kids.
Oh my gosh. It's like, okay, really? I know. Yeah. It's so crazy. And just to kind of bounce off that, you know, the co-regulation with another person, a quick example, like my mom will be here, right? On like one of the weekend days, she'll come down and she kind of like will really feel it out. And I'll be, you know, all of a sudden something will happen with like one of the kids or two of the kids. And it's funny because like I'll say one thing and then she'll just swoop right in and she'll get down there and she'll just immediately change the whole vibe. And then you immediately feed off of that. You're like, okay, nope. Yep. This is amazing. This is where I'm supposed to be. Like, let her take over. And then you're already thinking and regulating yourself in that moment. And can you imagine? Can you freaking imagine living in
more people?
Yeah. Oh my God. Even just with your friends, right? Like you're out with your friends and all their kids, right? It's like all hands on deck. And then if, you know, something's happening and you can just turn to your friend and be like, I can't believe this is happening again. And even just having someone to bounce that off of and then going to address the situation, right? It allows me to like, okay, I'm seeing my feelings first. I'm letting those out. I'm letting those go. Okay, now I can come over to this situation and address it. It's like, it's totally, totally different way of handling it as opposed to you just being by yourself and just being like, why?
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. And then, yeah. So it's, I mean, we could talk forever about all of those things, but we have to wrap up. So is there anything that you wanted to mention about this topic before we close up?
Yeah. I think in all of this, you know, there's so much that we could go into. And I think the most important thing for our children being able to understand that this story about, you know, hurts just being an indication that as humans, we need each other and that, you know, even grownups, when they're hurting, they need community. They don't just need one person. And then, you know, that's going to be very different than how the world works. Mm-hmm. Right? That's going to be different than how they see kids getting punished at school and how they see bad guys going to jail on movies. And then all the stereotypes that are, you know, about who goes to jail and who doesn't. There's going to be a lot that, you know, this story just doesn't align with. But I do think that if it's something that we're weaving in to the perspective with which we help them see themselves, see their siblings, see the world by modeling that that's how we see people without forcing them to see it that way, it allows us to be like the person that they're watching the movie with instead of, well, that's the movie of the world. And, you know, I'll tell you one thing and then you got to figure it out there. But this is the rest of our lives with a lot of talking about what we're seeing out there and what we're experiencing out there and being able to say, you know, that's something I wish didn't happen in our world.
Yes.
Right? This is something I wish looked more like this. And this can even be about, you know, mommy's feelings. And I don't mean mommy, just me, like mother's feelings getting so big that they can't be as gentle with their children as they would want to be a lot of the time because they're not getting a lot of the help that they need, right? And not like they're not doing their job and getting the help, but there isn't a lot. And I wish it were different. And the best we can do is try to help each other and try to know about what's going on around us in our communities, in the world, and do that together.
Yes.
As a family, because it does always come back to, right? Like that togetherness and that sense of connection that we know is what's going to give them the strongest base for then showing up in the world with that sense of belonging and caring for all humanity. So, yeah.
Yeah. To kind of bounce off of that, have you heard of there's a book brand, it's called A Kids Co. They have like these books and it's a kid's book about racism, a kid's book about, it could be like little topics for like younger children. So it could just be about sharing. It could be about bullying. It could be about, there's like a lot of social injustice issues that they talk about. Mm-hmm. And they have all these different authors that write the books. And it's a book that's meant to be read alongside the child where it kind of prompts certain discussions. I've found them really, really great for our kids to bring up certain things. And the books can be great for maybe something you want to talk about that's currently happening like globally or in the world. And you can say, okay, tonight we're going to read about this and kind of then applying it to, okay, and this is what's currently happening, you know, in an age appropriate way. I have found those books to be amazing. So in case you're looking for something that, because sometimes I think parents can have trouble with certain topics, just finding the words for things. And when you have a book to kind of guide you along and give you like those prompts for discussion, it can be so, so much easier. Especially, you know, I did a podcast topic, it's probably a couple years ago now, but it was just about talking to your kids about sex. And it can be an uncomfortable topic for some parents. And so why not just start off by just getting age-appropriate books and kind of reading through them and then seeing if they have questions, you know? It can just be an easy way to kind of bring things up. Okay, so I have two questions for you that I ask everybody that I have on. So the first question is, if you could give one piece of advice to mothers, what would it be?
Never stop finding ways to bring help and support into your life.
I love that. Yeah. And one way that I feel like we don't always think about is, you know, when you think about help, you think about your significant other, or you think about your family. If they're not nearby, you think about maybe friends. What I've been thinking about more recently is, I mean, obviously with four kids, it's like my oldest, she's kind of been a big help for me, but also our neighborhood. And if you're in a neighborhood, like, don't be afraid to kind of like reach out to people in your neighborhood and like connect with them. And we have neighbors across the street that are, their kids are in their 30s. And so they've just been really good friends of ours. And they've been offering, they're like, oh, if they ever need a ride somewhere, don't be afraid to be like, hey, yeah, I remember, like, can you take my child to this place? Like, that would be immensely helpful. And for other people, I think sometimes we feel like we're just being a burden, right? Like as a mom, I'm just like, I'm burdening everybody with my issues and trying to get my kids here and there and everywhere. But people naturally are inclined to help, right? Like if somebody asked me to bring their kids somewhere, I would be like, I can't believe they're giving me this privilege of taking care of their kid. Like, they trust me enough to do that. And I want to help. And it makes people feel really good to help. So don't be afraid to ask for that help. And we also have another neighbor who her kids are getting older and older, and her 13-year-old very often is like taking our kid, like she'll take and watch our 3-year-old while she's outside. And so it's like I've got this new free hour of all the kids are in the backyard playing and I don't need to worry about it. And it's just like this amazing thing. So kind of think about like outside of the box, like, okay, is there help within my own like immediate neighborhood area? Because that's something that I didn't really always put into my toolbox of people that could help me. So the last question I have for you is, if you could make one meal for your family that everyone would eat that's relatively quick and easy, what would it be?
Oh, that's a good one. It's actually, that like taps into so much of my childhood because I do have issues around cooking. Mm. But, you know, right now it's actually hamburgers, getting the ground beef and making the patties and all of that stuff, just because it's something that my daughter really enjoys helping prepare every step of the way, like cutting up all the ingredients and things like that. And then it's just, you know, the taste is very easy for kids.
Yeah. Yeah. Easy peasy.
And I love hamburgers. Yeah.
Put what you want on it. And I love it. That's great.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much, Gabriella, for taking time out of your day to talk with us about this really important topic. We really appreciate you.
Thank you so much. I loved having this conversation with you.
Thank you so much for hanging out with us today. All resources mentioned in this episode can be found in the show notes on lindsayandco.com. To continue these important conversations, head over to Motherhood Meets Medicine on Instagram. Let me know what you learned from this episode and who you would love to hear from next. I always love getting feedback from you. If you're finding value in this podcast, please rate, review, subscribe, and share with a friend. This will help us to reach even more women from around the world. I'll catch you next week. Until then, don't forget to find some time to unplug, unwind, and have a little fun.